Grid modernization talks about incorporating, I would say, technology, different new developments and ideas to build the grid of the future.
Welcome to the Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 121, episode 121 of the Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players, and stakeholders, the folks that have been pondering the future of how we create, move, trade, and use energy, and what the future changes will mean for electricity companies, regulators, society, and customers. I hope these conversations have given you, the listener, a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. My guest on the podcast today is
Andrea Nusso. I'm the grid modernization leader for Capgemini in Canada.
Andrea joined me for a conversation about Capgemini, its role in the electricity sector and in the energy transition. We talk about grid modernization, incorporating new technologies to build more affordable, resilient, and cleaner grids. We discuss key technologies like AMI, advanced metering infrastructure for real-time data, and non-wires alternatives. We unpack challenges, including the regulatory uncertainty and cultural resistance within the sector, and the promise of artificial intelligence, AI, and its potential to play a significant role in analyzing vast data and improving decision-making. We close the conversation with another great book recommendation. Here is my conversation with Andrea Nusso, recorded on Zoom in early September 2025. Andrea, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Francis. Happy to be here.
So I guess, based upon your title, we might be talking about grid modernization today.
I hope so. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about.
Well, why don't we, though, for the listener, start off with just a little bit of background about Capgemini, just so they can understand where Capgemini fits in the kind of value proposition in the supply chain.
Yes, absolutely. Capgemini was actually founded in 1967 in Paris. So it's a French headquartered company. Capgemini is one of those global players. We offer management consulting, IT, and engineering services really across the globe. So with over 55 years of experience, we operate in over 50 countries and have employees really located around the world.
Gotcha. And I'm here in Canada's capital, in Ottawa today. Where do we find you today?
I am located in Toronto. Gotcha. So Capgemini has an office. The main office in Canada is in Toronto.
Gotcha. Okay. And how big would Capgemini be in Canada?
So globally, we have over 360,000 people in
Canada. Wow.
Yes, it's a big company.
Okay.
And in Canada, Capgemini Canada has 4,000 people.
Okay.
So half of them are located in Canada. Half of them are designated to the Canadian market, but located offshore, most of them in India.
Gotcha. Okay. And then we'll dig down into grid mod in a minute, but I'm assuming those thousands of people don't all work specifically on grid modernization for the electricity sector.
No. So Capgemini operates across all sorts of sectors. So we really cover the whole spectrum of industries.
No.
But energy and utilities has always been one of the focus areas in Canada. Mm-hmm. So ever since Capgemini Canada was founded in 2004, that was one of the focus industries. So we have quite a few people working specifically on the energy sector and with our energy and utility clients. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and grid modernization is definitely one of the key focus and growth areas for us.
Okay, great. So let's talk about grid modernization. And, you know, once again, for the listener, maybe if you could kind of give just a thumbnail sketch of when we're talking about grid modernization, what is it that we are talking about? Because this is it's not the kind of the core issue that we talk about on the podcast, but it is a critical one. So let's get your perspective on what it is that we're talking about when we're talking about grid mod.
Yeah, it's a really broad topic, and I'm glad you asked for a definition because narrowing it down, I think, is sometimes quite helpful to have a more meaningful conversation. So I think we're talking about what do we need to do to equip the grid to be ready for the future? And what do we maybe have to do differently than we have done in the past? So I think there's no doubt that the electricity grid is the greatest machine ever invented, essentially. But it was invented over 100 years ago. So technology has developed. There has been a lot of innovation in different sectors. And a lot of this applies to the electricity sector as well. And there might be ways in which we can do things better. And use some of these new technologies to really help us build a more affordable, resilient, and reliable grid. And ideally, a cleaner one as well. So, really, grid modernization talks about incorporating, I would say, technology, different new developments and ideas to build the grid of the future.
Okay, great. So I want to drill down on a number of those, but just to, so that we've got a kind of a clear idea of what the sort of the guardrails here as we go down this path. It really is about the technology and how the technology is being deployed, how it's being used.
I think that's one really big aspect
Okay.
and maybe a driving force. I think it spills also into what new ecosystem do we need to build or do we need to foster
Okay.
as part of this journey? And one of the key things that's very close to my heart is the relationship with customers, with end customers. So how do electricity providers really need to think about their relationship with their customers and how can this relationship become a much closer, more mutually beneficial relationship that can help solve a lot of the problems and see some of the opportunities that we're seeing.
Right. Well, listen, I think maybe that's a good spot to maybe pause and do a little bit of a tangent here. And I ask folks this when they come on the podcast about their journey, seeing as how you mentioned the customer, because I do know as part of your journey, you did spend some time with actually the company that does our polling within Innovative Research. So you spent a number of years talking directly to customers, both there and in some of your other work. But in terms of your journey, I make the joke every time, when you were a kid on the playground, is this what you always dreamed of doing? How did you get from the playground to your role today with Capgemini?
I don't think it was a straight line, and I'm not sure if I had the dream of being in this role, but it's definitely been an interesting journey. So I started my career early on in marketing and advertising, and always being interested in kind of the customer side. And then I spent a number of years in academia, really studying customer behavior, consumer behavior, and voter behavior. I have a few degrees in political science and sociology and media communication science, ultimately studying political science with a focus on voting behavior and consumer behavior. That's what my PhD is in. And then that got me to Innovative Research Group. So at Innovative Research, I did customer research across a number of industries. And it was there that I fell in love with the energy sector. So I started doing a lot of customer satisfaction and regulatory research for various utilities, mostly in Ontario. And that's what got me hooked. And then I started actually working at Hydro One. I was responsible for customer strategy, customer experience, and demand side management, and really get my feet wet in the whole innovation part. Like, what do we need to do to build a grid that meets customer needs? And how do we need to rethink the customer relationship? And how do we need to embrace innovation to move everything forward?
Well, that gives us, I think, a good agenda for what we can talk about. So why
Yeah.
don't we start with that first thing that you mentioned there? So what do we need to do to build a grid that responds to customers' needs? What are the sorts of things that we like? What are the kind of the big pieces that we need to be thinking about?
I think first we need to really understand where customers are coming from and what customers are doing or are planning to do. In the past, I think customers were defined by their account number, both residential and commercial customers. I think there is a real trend that understanding what customers are doing can help us better understand their consumption and what they're intending to do in the future. So if we have a more holistic understanding of what the different players, I would say, in the system are intending to do, it's much easier to plan for all eventualities, and make sure that we build a system that actually meets their needs. And customers are changing. Customers want to have better service. I'm sure you've encountered that through your polling. Customers have different expectations from other service providers that they're now bringing to the electricity sector. They have a need or a requirement or a curiosity to better understand what is going on. How can they save on their electricity bill? How can they make a more meaningful impact when it comes to their lifestyle, their comfort, their carbon footprint? So giving customers some of that information, but at the same time collecting some information from them to, again, better understand what they're doing, but also providing more information really fosters a much closer relationship that then allows, I think, utilities to also start asking customers to take certain actions, for example. That gets us quickly to the demand side management piece, for example.
So, you didn't talk much about technology,
Not
which
yet.
no, but I think it's interesting and probably telling that the starting point of this conversation isn't about, wow, we have a cool technology. What are we going to do with it? You're really approaching it from what does the customer want? What does the customer need? What is that customer relationship going to look like? So I find no, I just find it interesting that the starting point is not about technology. Though it seems to be in so many other things that we deal with. So then yeah, let's chat a little bit about that. So what do we need to do to be able to equip the grid for the future to meet those customer needs and expectations? What does that mean from a technology standpoint?
Yeah, so to me, technology is a means to an end.
Okay.
So we shouldn't deploy technology just for the sake of technology, just because it's a new shiny object that is enticing. We should always approach it from a problem statement, essentially. And in the case of customers and grid planning, technology can be a real enabler. Technology can help us, as I said earlier, understand customers better and provide information to customers. But at the same time, it can also provide a lot of data about what is going on the grid. So when you think about the electricity grid today, especially the distribution system, it's still fairly analog. It's essentially poles and wires and substations and transformers, but they are very, very analog pieces. In other areas of our day-to-day life, we are very used to data and using data to make data-based decisions. And that's where technology can come in too. It can make the grid smarter. It can provide much more granular data and help us better predict what we need to do. It can help us better restore power, for example, in the event of a storm or any other extreme weather event. It can help us, again, understand where trends are happening. So if there's load growth happening in some areas of the grid, but maybe not others, so in the aggregate, it's a wash, but that could still lead to challenges on the grid. So having more insights and data really helps us be better prepared and have more tools to build this grid of the future that I mentioned earlier.
So, I think it'd be interesting to talk about some of those potential changes at the grid level. What is it going to look like at the customer level, though? Is it still going to look fairly analog, or is even that relationship going to change because of the increasing digitalization?
I think it's already changing.
Okay.
If you look at the basic level, a lot of customers now want e-billing. They don't want a paper bill anymore. So they're very used to logging in to some portal, to receiving communication electronically. So that's, I would say, the very basic level. A lot of customers don't want to call the contact center anymore. They want to communicate via chats, via portals with their electricity provider at their own time, not necessarily when the call center is open. And they also would like to see more information about how they consume electricity and how they could potentially save on their bill. So we see, for example, across Canada, multiple utilities providing a breakdown of the bill and providing actionable insights to customers on how they could potentially switch to a different time of use rate, how they could change certain appliances in their home, how they could change their behavior, enroll in demand response programs, for example, to give them more flexibility, more choice, and to save on their electricity while pursuing some of their other goals.
So that's the customer side. Now, on the utility side, what are those changes going to look like? And because you talked about some potential examples, faster restoration, better management in the face of extreme weather, and so on. It isn't just a mindset; it's also going to be different technologies. What are the things that are kind of not like far off on the horizon, but what are the things that you're seeing today and in the immediate future?
I think a really big topic in Ontario, but also in other provinces right now, is AMI, so advanced metering infrastructure. So almost all provinces across Canada have a version of AMI meters. So these AMI meters are basically digital meters that you don't have to read by walking by. They can be read remotely, essentially. And that's the very basic functionality. But these meters collect a lot more data, and this data can be brought back and to the utility and give the utilities a lot of information about how electricity is consumed, when it is consumed, potentially for what purposes, by whom. So having this data, for example, that can inform how the grid works in real time is a big step into operating and planning the grid differently. So let's say rather than doing everything rules-based and saying, look, the average household or the average company consumes X during peak, and this is how we plan the grid, we can now have the data, and the actual experience of who consumes how much power when. And understanding that really allows us different insights. And I think where digitization and technology comes in is really bringing that data back, providing the tools to analyze the data and get real insights from it. And then using these insights to plan a grid that is more tailored towards these specific usage patterns, these load patterns, these trends that we are seeing over time if we trace the data over time. So I think that is a real real trend right now through AMI. And AMI is really located at the grid edge, at everyone's home or at someone's commercial property. So really at the outer skirts of the grid. Then there are some other technologies like sensors or smart substations that are a little closer to the center of the grid. And bringing all of these pieces together, I think that opens up a whole new world of opportunities and insights through data, essentially.
So you use the term grid edge, and I hear that term all the time. Now, would we be accurate in sort of defining grid edge as that seam between the utility company and the customer, that interface? Is that the grid edge?
Yeah, that's why I would explain what how I would describe the location of the grid edge. I
Okay.
think often when people talk about grid edge, they talk about grid edge computing, for example, and more of a decentralization of intelligence, maybe. So what's exciting about these new meters, for example, is they can deliver insights from the grid edge, basically. But some of these new meters, often we talk about AMI 2.0, for example,
Okay.
these new meters have computing capabilities. So they don't just collect data, they can actually process data right there at the site of someone's house.
Okay.
So in some ways, it's like putting a smartphone on someone's house. So the data will be analyzed right there, and then the result of this analysis, so alerts, for example, can be brought back right away. So you don't have to wait to backhaul all of the billing data, for example, every 4 hours, like it's done today. You can get real-time information from the grid edge because these meters process data and they can find anomalies and send those back right away. So that creates much more real-time or near real-time visibility for grid operators. And that's a big step into understanding much better what's going on. And that's a way, to get back to my earlier example, to faster restoration time, for example.
Gotcha. Okay. I was trying to connect the dots. No,
Yes.
because when I mind you, I've been in the sector a very long time, but back then the meter served a pretty simple purpose. It measured how many kilowatt hours were consumed over a period of 60 days or 30 days. Now we're talking about information on a real time basis, and then the question is, so what does one do with that information? And it sounds as though there's kind of two sides to that equation. And you talked a little bit about what the utility can do with it in terms of restoration, but there are customer opportunities as well, right? So this is something that benefits both sides of that edge of the grid.
Yes, absolutely. So customers can also benefit from these insights if the utility makes these insights available to customers. So if customers understand when they use electricity, maybe how they use electricity, so how much they spend, let's say they have an electric vehicle, how much they spend on EV charging versus other appliances in their home. Whether or not they are on different time of use rates, because across Canada you have multiple provinces that have different time of use rates. So at some times of the day, electricity is cheaper than at other times. So using that information to help customers manage their electricity consumption and maybe even possibly all of their energy consumption by understanding how much goes into electricity for what purpose, they have a much better basis to make a decision whether or not they want to move away from fossil fuels towards electricity, for example, because they understand much better what the financial impact would be.
And then when we're talking about customers, we're not simply talking about the residential customer that might be, spending $100 or $200 a month. In some cases, we're talking commercial industrial customers where that electricity is a significant, potentially significant cost of doing business and may
Absolutely.
make a difference between whether you're profitable or not.
Absolutely. For a lot of industrial customers, electricity is one of the main components of their operating expenses. So they are very keenly interested in opportunities to save. So they are very interested in programs that the province, the utility offers to help them save money. They might be willing to shift their consumption to certain times, like off-peak times, especially if that saves them money. Often that got comes with changes that they have to make to their manufacturing process, but it could still be worth it for them. So for them, really understanding what the opportunities are in terms of savings, but also what the insights are in terms of power quality and reliability. These are really, really important factors for commercial and industrial customers too. So seeing where outages occur, for example, understanding the pattern better, having a better understanding of potential power quality issues and how either they can solve them themselves or how they can solve them together with the utility. These are really important insights that can make a huge difference for commercial customers.
Okay. So grid modernization is more than just AMI, right?
Yes.
What are the other things that we should be thinking of when we're considering grid modernization?
Yeah, so AMI is really just one source of information and one way of collecting data. I think another really critical piece is understanding flexibility and how do we deal with flexible loads. So one term that's floating around quite a bit are non-wires alternatives right now. I'm sure you heard about it. In different provinces, utilities are now asked by the regulator to come up with non-wire solutions to replace poles and wires type solutions. So not just to invest in capital and build more infrastructure, but to think about solutions that utilize what's already built to address certain capacity issues, for example. So some of these flexible solutions could be batteries or other distributed energy resources. So generation assets or assets that are not permanently generating electricity, but that are flexible in terms of intermittent resources. So how do we incorporate some of these into the electricity grid? Because that's a bit of a challenge. It's a challenge, again, because of the intermittent nature, but also because of the two-directional flow of electricity. So the system, I think we all know, has been built basically as a one-way street from large generation stations all the way to the end customer. But now there's more and more customers and utilities as well that are interested in putting in distributed energy resources. So again, battery, solar, other wind, gas turbines. So there could be other generation assets that all of a sudden create a two-way power flow. So not just from big generation via transmission and distribution, but the other way around, essentially. So that creates a lot of opportunities, but also a big challenge because the grid, again, wasn't built for this two-way traffic. So how do we deal with that? And that's, again, where grid modernization and technology can help.
But no, I mean, non-wire alternatives is you know something is now a significant part of the business when we create a three-letter acronym to describe it, right? So
We love acronyms, but
that's
yes.
right. That's where we've been there with AMI for a while, and now NWA is a thing that folks focus on. So l when we started off, you talked about some of the things that we need to be thinking and changing how we do that. So in this context, what are some of the things that we need to do differently? I mean, you talked about some new technologies and some new approaches, but in terms of things that we've been doing up until now that need to change, so I guess I'm kind of getting at, are there some fundamental barriers to being more efficient and to rolling out grid modernization more rapidly? Are there things that are standing in our way?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of big barriers. One barrier that often gets mentioned first is a regulatory barrier. So there is a need to do things differently, but the regulatory system hasn't fully caught up. And what that means is there's some uncertainty, and mostly there's uncertainty for utilities or electricity providers when it comes to cost recovery. So, when utilities file their rate applications, they usually have a pretty good sense of what types of investments have previously been allowed to seek cost recovery from the regulator. And some of these new technologies present a bit of a challenge because they haven't been proven. So they for utilities, they present a bit of a risk. And it's not, there's, they don't have as much of a proven track record, maybe, to deliver certain benefits.
Okay.
So I would say there's a combination of regulatory uncertainty, but also a bit of a cultural dimension within utilities, where utilities tend to be more risk averse than other industries, maybe by the nature of what they do, and justifiably so. But because there's not cost recovery certainty sometimes, and utilities tend to be on the cautious side, that would, I would say, this combination can create a bit of a barrier to doing things differently and embracing new technology and innovation in the space. And then I would say the other one, and bringing it back to the customer and the customer relationship, when you think about this two-directional flow of electricity and this new ecosystem that I mentioned earlier as well, this requires a very different style of communication, a very different relationship, where we need to see each other as different players, I would say, in the same system. And electricity providers are not just the organizations that deliver electricity to an end customer. They need to also understand again what these customer needs are, and maybe at times ask for something from these customers. So when we go back to demand response or non-wires alternative, for example, at times asking customers to change their behavior slightly could really be the solution to this non-wires alternative. So if I know that one of my large commercial customers is willing and able to shift some of their demand out of peak times, that could potentially be exactly the temporary solution that I need to take pressure off the system. And if I find ways to compensate the customer for their behavior, that creates a very different relationship. Again, in terms of communication, in terms of how we relate to each other, but also having to find different compensation mechanisms, and potentially even like a market that compensates everybody fairly and provides these mechanisms that will hopefully be allowed by the regulator. So again, that's kind of where I would say the circle closes.
Yeah, and that well, and that second one is potentially very complex because, as you say, one piece of it is whether or not it'll be something that that a regulator will allow, and then the second is does the market as it's structured allow it? So it is regulatory, it is potentially legislative in nature. So yeah, that is complex because of the differences between the different markets and marketplaces across the country.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't avoid talking about very briefly about tariffs because a number of the recent podcasts that I've done, people have talked about challenges with supply chains and trying to trying to figure that out. But Capgemini is more of a kind of an intellectual property company as opposed to a manufacturer of hard assets. But is the changing trading, international trading regime and the disruptions that we've seen, has that caused changes in terms of how your business has been operating?
So, because Capgemini is a French company, at like the group is headquartered in France, Capgemini Canada is its own entity located in Canada. We have not encountered any direct issues with tariffs in terms of having been blocked from certain procurements, for example. I know that in Canada, there have been certain trends of not buying American, for example, or
Oh, I
buying
see. Yes.
primarily
Right.
Canadian. So we've definitely been spared from that. We've had a lot of questions about American software, American manufacturing. Are there alternatives to that? Are there ways around it? Because the uncertainty around costs related to tariffs is definitely something that stresses utilities out, Canadian utilities, because it's very different, difficult for them to plan ahead. I would say there's also a bit of a reluctance maybe to go with American products or software or companies when there are Canadian alternatives or other alternatives. So we have definitely noticed a bit of a shift in the market. The way we feel it is usually because we get a lot of questions. And the nice thing is we operate across the globe, so we do have experience in all different markets. So we often can bring that experience and potential alternatives. So there's definitely uncertainty. I'm not sure that anybody has completely shifted their plans or their behaviors, but there are these questions, and utilities seem to be grappling with it.
Okay. Well, and then the other question about what's been in the news a lot lately, and I know it's one that your company has thought a lot about, and that's AI and artificial intelligence. I know your colleague Tom has talked about this as well quite extensively. How important is AI going to be in the future, specifically of grid modernization? Those tools, I'm guessing, are probably going to be increasingly important.
Yes. When we think about how much data we have about the electricity system and how much more data we are collecting on a daily basis, especially as we install more smart sensors, more smart meters, there's this wealth of information. And somehow we need to analyze this information. And it's too much for humans to do it. So we need tools to do it. I think there's a journey how we get to specific AI tools. There is still a lot of room in the utility space to start with automation before we go, like I would say, all the way to agentic AI. But AI will, that's my guess, play a really significant role, really understanding what is happening on the grid, helping with real-time decision making, because it's just too much for individual operators to make that decision. They will, for a long time, I assume, be humans making the last really important decisions. But AI can really help surface a lot of this information and turn all of this data and information into insights, actionable insights that then humans can action.
So if we put this on a spectrum, grid modernization of kind of a crawl, walk, run, AI sounds as though it's going to be how we get from walking to running.
I think there's some early applications now
Already?
where you can use yes where you can use AI to sift through data, for example. We're not talking about using AI to automate certain processes necessarily yet, but we can use AI to summarize data, to surface insights from a whole bunch of data. So I think for a long time utilities have been using data lakes, for example, but often a lot of data goes into these data lakes, but it's not that easy to get data out of it again. So there are really good AI applications that can help surface some of this information. Again, to allow people to be, or humans to make better decisions. When we talk, I think what you mentioned, the walk to run phase, I think is when we allow AI to make decisions. Essentially, I would say that's a big distinction, but allowing or using AI to surface insights, that's already happening.
Andrea, everybody who comes on the podcast, I ask for a book recommendation. And we assemble it in our Flux Capacitor Book Club list. And it also actually gives me my reading list too. So I'm always interested in what people are reading because I think it gives you a bit of an insight into folks. And so I'd be really interested to know what book you will recommend that we add to our list today.
Yeah, that question was a bit of a challenge because there were so many I could have chosen from. But I chose today Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart. And this might be a surprising pick, but I'm a big fan of Brené Brown's. I think she's a tremendous researcher. And she started off as a shame researcher, but her research is extremely applicable to leadership and to organizational culture. And since we started our conversation with the human side, essentially, I think this is where things come back to. Her work is so instrumental in really understanding the human side. And when we think about the relationship between humans and technology, technology implementation is easy. What is really difficult is human beings to adapt some of this new technology, to embrace it, and to use it. And I think when we think about all the stuff that we talked about today, all the change that will happen in order to seize opportunities and not just be scared by some of the challenges, we really need to be mindful of the people that we're dealing with and how we need to show up as leaders and really understand where people are coming from. And one of the key insights that came out of this book is one of the biggest sources of shame for people in the workplace is the fear of becoming redundant or irrelevant. And I think keeping that in mind when we talk about all this change that's coming, new technology that we need to introduce, keeping that in mind that it gets to, for some people, it really gets to the core of their being. And that's why there's some resistance. And that's why there's a certain maybe cultural resistance to change. To me, that's such an important insight that we need to keep in mind as we think about change and innovation and all the things that we need to do in terms of technology, but also progress in general.
Well, this is a first, 120 episodes in, and this is the first time that the same author, different books, have been recommended in two podcasts, one after the other,
Oh,
because
wow.
the previous podcast that just went up the other day, the recommendation there was also a Brené Brown book, Dare to Lead. And so our recommendation, adding it to our reading list this week, is also by Brené Brown, and that book is Atlas of the Heart. And with that recommendation going on to our list, Andrea, I want to thank you for taking the time to join me today. It was great chatting with you.
Thank you very much, Francis. I had a great time. It was a great conversation.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning, and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me on Instagram as the Brad Bradley, on Blue Sky as at Francis Bradley, on LinkedIn, and through our website at electricity.ca. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 121. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Andrea's recommendation. Atlas of the Heart, Mapping Meaningful Connection and the Language of Human Experience by Brené Brown. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.